Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
McDaniel will end it in style. Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won their first ever national championship.
Still missing your free throws, Wes? Who cares? They don't show free throws in SportsCenter.
Here's Washington. On the drive.
I don't know if he'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
And they do it in stunning fashion over the number two team in the country.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I walk away. I'm still a chump.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
You got a men's game tomorrow. I got to laugh a little bit because here we are looking at the upcoming schedule for Mike Anderson's team, and you're looking at an ACC school coming in, Georgia Tech. They do have a little bit of good basketball history, and then they go lose a bye game to Gardner-Webb. It appears to be a pretty good low to mid-major program, but Georgia Tech losing at home 79-69, so I guess that takes a little bit of, well, not the suspense, but a little bit of the trepidation you might feel anytime that you see one of the bigger conference names coming in to Bud Walton. You can throw that out the door now. Really does look like it should be. I don't know if I'd say an easy Arkansas win. To be honest, I don't know if just because of the youth of the team, and although they do seem like they gel at times, I don't know if we can expect a lot of easy wins for the rest of the season. Going to have some highs and some lows. And speaking of highs and lows, tomorrow I guess will be a little more of a high than anything else for Arkansas Razorback fans. I saw that, and this is something we'll bring up later on the show with Nikki Chavanel, who joins us every Tuesday from Rivals.com, that Rivals ranks the top 100 recruiting classes in the country. They've got Arkansas at number 12, and there are 26 incoming freshmen, according to Rivals, and that is second most of any of these 100 teams. Only Ole Miss has more. So, of course, both in the same division. A little bit interesting. So for a team that had, you know, the worst season record-wise in program history, tomorrow, just like Chad Morris has been talking about, is just a step in another direction for next year, and should be a very interesting day, plus a long day, Ty Richardson. The first signing tomorrow, and they all have signing ceremonies, of course, even though there's not a lot of suspense for some of these kids. Myron Cunningham is signing his paperwork at 7 o'clock in the morning. So is Marcus Miller. These are the kids that will be at the practice facility at 4:30 in the morning with protein shake already made.
Getting it done early, man.
And then there's Trey Knox, who's signing at 8 o'clock at night, which is 4 hours after anybody else signs. So I guess Trey's got a busy day down there. Is that the kid from Warren?
Murfreesboro.
Murfreesboro, that's right. Okay, that Traylon Burks is from Warren. So correct. It's a busy night for Trey Knox, I guess. So a long day, an exciting day. But not everybody is signing, even though it is early signing day, which feels more like regular signing day, because most of the signings happen tomorrow. They don't happen on February the 6th, when conceivably the rest of the recruiting class is going to sign their name to, well, we thought maybe you could do a PDF. You don't have to do that rolled up thermal fax paper any longer. PA tight end Hudson Henry, Traylon Burks from Warren, Phoenix City central running back Amonte Spivey, Cedar Grove defensive end Dante Walker, and safety Miles Brooks out of Pflugerville, Texas, plus Adonis Odie are not going to be signing tomorrow. So I guess that makes people a little bit nervous, because it gives other programs another, well, almost 2 months, about 6 to 7 weeks to keep the messages coming and try to get them to flip. Speaking of a flip, tie, and I wonder about this too, Tulsa commit Ricky Stromberg has become the newest commit to Arkansas's 2019 class. And that makes it six offensive linemen, with a couple of them out of the JUCO ranks. I'd seen on Rivals they had him ranked as a two-star. 24/7's got him ranked as a three-star. It doesn't necessarily sound like the kind of prospect you'd be excited about from Tulsa, but apparently this is a kid who has gotten a lot better over the course of his senior season, very athletic, and he doesn't seem like this idea of a two-star from a middling program that's just a warm body, does he?
No, Phil, here's what's kind of interesting about him. I was listening to Trey Biddy elaborate on him. 24/7 actually has him as a four-star. Now, he is a composite three-star. And what the composite ranking is from 24/7, it takes Rivals, ESPN, and 24/7's rankings and combines it into one ranking. And he's a three-star on that outlet. But on 24/7 by itself, he's a four-star. Like, he's a top 300 kid. Like, and I think Arkansas, and Trey was kind of talking about how when sometimes people think, oh, just because you have great offers everywhere, that makes you a great player. I mean, you can look at his list. Like, he was committed to Tulsa. Arkansas is really the only big dog on his offer sheet. It's not like he has just a vast list full of blue bloods everywhere. And so Arkansas is getting a kid that I think might be overlooked a little bit amongst the college football world. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, he has to perform on the field. His older brother actually went to Arkansas. I couldn't find his name. I just knew that. Three-star, as you mentioned, out of Tulsa. You're happy it's an offensive lineman, Phil. Because right. The more offensive lineman, the better, especially after the play this season, and really not just this season, the past couple seasons, what Austin Allen had to go through at the quarterback position, and then Ty Story this year, the more the merrier, Phil. That's how I look at it, and I think that's how a lot of fans are looking at it right now. The more offensive linemen we have on campus, the better.
So there's six now that are on the incoming. We talked quite a bit about a couple of them out of JUCO ranks last week when you had Myron Cunningham and Chiboyze Nwana both make their verbal commitment a week before they'll put pen to paper. Bo Limmer out of Tyler, Texas. Dylan Rathke out of Louisiana. And then, interestingly, but yeah, this will happen in college too, but one of Stromberg's rivals out of Jenks, which is a rival for Union High School in Tulsa, Brady Latham, also in that 2019 class. So the offensive line is going to have quite a bit. We knew it would have a much different look with three guys moving on. And so that's a good thing, too, because the O-line was certainly a problem. So you mentioned, all right, so we know you needed to shake things up on the offensive line. You got to shake things up on the quarterback side as well. You know, Cole Kelly has already announced his transfer. And now, I didn't look at the message boards after Justin Fields's, but he made no announcement. It's Dan Wolkin out of USA Today writes the story reporting that Justin Fields and his father have had meetings with Kirby Smart about his future in the past few weeks, hasn't formally requested a transfer, but has informed them that he's interested in leaving. So yeah. I guess everybody at every school in the country now that needs a quarterback, either, of course, you're figuring he's got since he's going to transfer as a freshman, he's got to sit out a year, but he's applying for he's applying to the NCAA to play next season because of
baseball player, Phil.
Darn baseball. I remember this kid too, Adam Sasser, the Georgia first baseman, DH, a really good left-handed hitter and a senior that was coming back. I think dropped an N-bomb on him when he was walking off the field against the early October game against Tennessee. So Sasser was thrown off the team for that incident, and that is the incident he's pointing to for a hardship transfer.
Correct.
I mean, you can say what you want, but that has a little bit of a feel that isn't quite true.
But,
I don't know what he was treated the rest of the way. I know that. I mean, hey, we were always going to remember Justin Fields, no matter what he does.
Right.
I think for the rest of his career, we're going to remember 4th-and-11 and the worst call of the season, perhaps, on that fake punt. That's the last play he ever made with Georgia, and he got destroyed also by his own coach, didn't he? I mean, didn't Kirby Smart kind of say that was the player's decision, should have called a timeout?
Yeah, but you can't put that on the true freshman.
And it's a fake. Justin Fields.
Oh, my gosh.
It was 4th-and-11. Alabama's going to take over at the 48-yard line.
I don't think Kirby Smart, like, that falls on the head coach.
Of course it does.
It does. I mean, you can't put that on a true freshman. But kind of back to your point, Phil, with the hardship transfer. Phil, if they don't allow it, that's going to be a public relations nightmare for Georgia and the NCAA because of the Shea Patterson situation, the fact that he was able to transfer it out amid the NCAA violations. And so you're going to couple that, say, oh, you're going to let this kid transfer out, but the NCAA violations, and then this kid gets called a racial slur, and he wants to get out, and you can debate if that's valid or not, if he was just, if he's trying to use that, or if he really felt,
It's apples and oranges, yeah, as far as I could see.
But that's the situation George and the NCAA's in, because now he can use that and be like, well, I guess you don't care about African Americans and racial tensions and whatnot. And that's how he can pose that. So it's going to be a public relations nightmare if he is not granted this transfer, because he's just going to point at, hey, you let Shea Patterson transfer because of the NCAA violations, and there's probably other stories you can point to. So it's going to be interesting how this plays out. I'm kind of with you. Like, if it really was that big of a deal to him and he felt like the tensions were getting to a point where I can't be here, then you should have transferred out a while ago. But now, because of the end of the season, he's seeing how his playing time's playing out behind Jake Fromm, who is a great quarterback and hasn't done anything to lose his starting job. That's kind of the situation that he's in behind Jake Brown and with Kirby Smart, because it's not 100% he's going to transfer. It's not 100%, but it's looking like that's the direction we're heading towards.
I saw a list, and of course Fields was the top quarterback recruit in the class of 2019. I saw a list put out by Jason Starrett of recent either number one or number two quarterbacks in each recruiting class that have transferred. And some of these, I don't even remember more than half of these names. You see if you can remember them here. Ty, I'll list them off. Okay. 2017, Hunter Johnson transferred.
He was from Clemson, correct?
Transfer. If you say so, I'll trust you.
Okay.
Shea Patterson. We know what Shea Patterson did, and it's still a name that's in the news. Jacob Eason. I don't know who Jacob Eason is.
Georgia to Washington.
Georgia to Washington.
From that area, so that's why he went back home. Because he lost his job to Jake Fromm after an injury early this season, and then he transferred.
Boy, for Jake Fromm, I mean, this is where number one and number two recruits go to, where their careers go to end, apparently.
It's kind of the situation that Kevin Sumlin was dealing with Texas A&M, Phil, because he had Kyle Allen, and then he brought Kyler Murray in, and Murray didn't feel like he got a fair shake, and then he transferred, and then it was just... That Texas A&M situation with someone with quarterbacks was a disaster. And Kirby Smart looks like he's kind of trending towards that direction. If this quarterback cycle keeps going in and out, if he keeps getting these top-tier QBs and they keep recycling like this.
And this is something that has happened every year now for the last 8 years, where either the number one or number two recruited quarterback has transferred. 2015, Blake Barnett. 2014, Kyle Allen. 2013, Max Brown. 2012, Gunnar Kyle. 2011, Jeff Driscoll. 2010, Phillip Sims. I don't remember a lot of these names really making much of an impact once they transferred out.
Yeah, Driscoll had a pretty good career at Florida. I think he went to West Virginia. Barnett was at Alabama and then transferred out. Brown was the same way. I'm blanking on the other names you listed. But, yeah, it's interesting. And Matt Hayes, who writes articles for, I think, Bleacher Report now, he then quote tweeted Jeff's tweet and said, and then these QBs went on to lose their job at where they transferred to, a couple of them, which is just crazy to think about, that you're trying to get out of one situation to get a starting job, and then you lose that second opportunity at another school. Crazy to think about.
And sometimes it takes a couple of transfers for someone to even find the place that is going to give them the playing time where they can show what they can do. I mean, Kyler Murray's on his third school, for crying out loud.
Yep.
He's look what's happened with him. I heard he had a pretty good season after Texas A&M. Or Texas Tech had no place for him to play, and all of a sudden here you are. So it does look like Justin Fields is thinking about it. And if the reports are coming out, I don't know if it's a matter of the family testing the waters or not. But there's obviously a source. What's the source? Where does Wolkin's source come from? Is it the family? Is it someone inside the school? Someone's trying to move things forward a little bit and maybe test the waters one way or the other and push them towards a decision.
And this is the former number one quarterback in the country, Phil. Like, Georgia was thrilled to have him on the roster. But now you think about it. If Fields transfers, Fromm's the only scholarship quarterback on Georgia's roster. And you don't know what's still up in the air. There's been multiple reports. Mark Slabaugh's got a really good article on ESPN that if you're wanting to learn more about the situation, you should read that. You should read Wolkin's article on USA Today. But it's one of those things where now, where does he go? Like, if this ends up holding out to fruition, he ends up transferring. And if you're Oklahoma, if you're Lincoln Riley, we just had Tyler McComas on yesterday. I actually tweeted at him about this news last night. You have the best selling point of any coach, any program in college football when it comes to a transfer quarterback. Because you take Baker away from Texas Tech, Heisman winner, college football playoff. Kyler Murray, exact same thing, except from Texas A&M, Heisman winner, college football playoff. There is not a better selling point, a better coach in college football that can sell himself, sell his program, sell a transfer than Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma. And you can, like, Arkansas fans will be like, what are the chances he comes here? Like, you are so far down the pecking order, it's unbelievable. And you wish Chad Morris had more leverage. But Lincoln, I mean, I don't know how, if you're an excellent transfer quarterback, that you don't even at least give Oklahoma a look, Phil. You have to.
So then who are the transfers that we already know about? We know about Shane Buechel out of Texas. We know about the kid from Southern Methodist, whose name Ben Hicks. Ben Hicks.
Pick Six Hicks.
could there be a worse nickname? I remember there was a pitcher in the 1980s and 90s named Bob Kipper, a left-handed reliever for the Pirates who was known as Round Tripper Kipper. That's the sort of same nickname. You just don't want to have that nickname. And Jalen Hurts, I mean, there's the thought that Jalen Hurts is going to be transferring
Khalil
as well.
Tate.
So the list is growing, and maybe you put Fields at the top of that list because you know you get more than 1 year out of him. There's a lot of talent there. It's unproven, though. I mean, he only threw 39 passes this year. It was accurate, though, 69%. Threw for 4 touchdowns without an interception. Most of his playing time recently came against, you know, Massachusetts and Georgia Tech, so you can take that for what it might be worth or what it's not worth. But Hurts, you know, Hurts is the guy. That to me is the more fascinating conversation, is Jalen Hurts moving on after the college football playoff is done? Or will he stay another year at Alabama, which obviously is a place that he seems to be very, very comfortable, even with the role that he's filled this year? And the relationship that it looks like he and Tua have built is such that it might be that they might not want to part ways just yet.
They were literally with Bart Starr yesterday. That's Alabama. Oh, we're already good. Let's just bring in a legendary quarterback, former Green Bay Packer. Let's bring him in. He's an Alabama alum, played quarterback. That's just, they had Kobe Bryant in this summer, Phil. Like, Alabama doesn't need any more help. They don't need any more famous alums. But it keeps going. And I think also you have to mention his relationship with Dan Enos, the fact that he's probably going to be elevated. I don't think he's been 100% elevated the OC role, unless I know there's a bunch of reports. I need to probably look that up. But that, you also have to think about that. But yeah, though, the thing about Hurts, two words, immediately eligible. That's the biggest thing about Hurts. Fields, you got to wait a year, which you can, as a coach, you either like or don't like for development purposes. But for fans, they like those two words, immediately eligible. And he's going to help some college football program out next year if he goes. And I played that clip like a week ago with Horowitz and Andy Staples, thinking that he's going to be a top three contender for the Heisman next year, which is crazy to think about because he's not even a starter right now.
And if the question had been about Hurts previously, if he can throw the ball, if he's just a single dimension quarterback, where even most of this year it looked like when he was brought in, he was brought in packages specifically for running. And then when you look at what he did in the SEC title game, where he made tremendous throws in pressure-filled situations down the stretch of the SEC championship game against a good Georgia defense, he can throw the ball. And that's no longer a weakness, or at least it doesn't look like it. It's a small sample, but if you were going by the small sample that you saw out of Tua Tagovailoa in the championship game last year, and you felt confident coming into this season what he could do, and he proved you right, how can you not feel the same way maybe about Jalen Hurts? And now, you know, we think about the idea of Justin Fields to Oklahoma, Jalen Hurts to Oklahoma, another one. I mean, you're going to try to – this is someone whose next step is the NFL. And the next step for Baker Mayfield, aside from the Heisman, was the NFL. The next step for Kyler Murray, if it wasn't for Major League Baseball, would be the NFL. And mate, the next step for Jalen Hurts, it's the exact same thing.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at PhilElsonPXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
Beard ahead to Gafford. How about a windmill? Let's put a little exclamation point on it. The Hogs are moving on.
Well, you're going to be working awfully hard, and it's not like you don't work awfully hard every single day, but tomorrow looks like an absolutely crazy day. Signing ceremonies at 7 o'clock, signing ceremonies at 8, and 26 players, but not everybody, is signing tomorrow. Do Arkansas fans have to be a little nervous about the kids who are not signing in the early period?
Yeah, there are a couple of them, three of them in particular, that they'll have to continue recruiting really hard. Amonte Spivey out of Alabama, the one running back commit in the class, he plans to visit Ole Miss at the end of January, and so he's not going to be signing tomorrow. And, I mean, I like Spivey a lot. Some people knock him a little bit for being a big LSU fan, but that's just how he grew up, so I don't hold it against him. I understand that he wants to explore other options, but he's been committed for quite a while, and he was even silently committed for a while before he announced in October, I think. So I think the Hogs will still end up getting him, but they will look into some other options, as they should. If you don't have guys signing tomorrow, then you should absolutely, you know, take some looks at some guys that were maybe a little further down on your board just in case. Two other guys to be a little bit concerned about: Adonis Ote. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife kind of guy, but he's a secondary player out of Tennessee. Trey Knox is signing, his teammate, tomorrow, but Adonis is going to wait and maybe take some more visits. From what I hear, it's kind of his dad's idea, and he would like to sign early, but they're going to explore their options and continue to do that for a while until February, but I do think that Arkansas is going to be his best option. And then Devin Bush out of Louisiana. He was high on LSU for a while, but postponed committing for a long, long time, and they eventually moved on from him. And they just had a JUCO defensive back switch commitments to I can't remember where, but so he thinks that there's kind of maybe room for him to join that class. I don't see it happening, but that's another guy to watch and to worry about a little bit.
Can you give me a reason, Nikki, why the NCAA doesn't just have a regular signing period that starts tomorrow and do away with the signing day in February?
Well, there are a few things that occur between now and the February day. Like, there are some All-American Bowl games that a lot of kids like to do a big commitment thing at those bowl games. And then there's also grades. A lot of teams want to wait and see how guys start off their last semester in high school. And so it's going to happen for Arkansas. They're going to wait on, for instance, Dante Walker out of Georgia. He's been working really hard to get things right in the classroom. But the thing is, if they sign early and then they can't make grades, then they lose the spot in the class. Like, they cannot replace him. So it does help if you need to wait on guys like that until February.
Nikki Chavanel is our guest. She covers Razorback recruiting for Rivals. Nikki, looking at who Arkansas should be concerned about, you listed those three guys. Who do you think of them or anyone else in the class that you think Arkansas should be most concerned about between losing now and February 6th?
Well, obviously running back. You need at least one running back a class. Arkansas had five really solid guys on the depth chart this past season, but there were times when three or four of them were hurt. For example, the Ole Miss game, I think they left Malik Williams at home, and Rakeem Boyd and Chase Hayden, and I mean they were pretty much down to just Chase, I think, for the end of the game, and that really hurt them. So it's always good to have at least one running back per class, no matter what. And so that's a concern. And then with Bush and Otay waiting, that only leaves Malik Chavis signing early as a secondary commit. And there's a guy that is announcing tomorrow where he'll go. So they could have two, but that secondary is a big issue. So they want to get as many guys in there in this 2019 class as they can. And so if they lose Bush and Otay, it's not going to be good. They need a lot of depth in this class.
Nikki, I can't remember which incoming player. I think it was a TQ Jackson. Don't hold me to that. But he quoted a guy who was criticizing his decision to come to Arkansas, and it seems like these incoming recruits have a chip on their shoulder. The fact that this team went 2-10 in 2018, and they think they can turn this program around. Do you think these incoming Arkansas recruits have extra motivation with all these players doubting the program? Not just players, but fans as well.
Yeah, definitely. It was TQ that said that, and he handled it really well. I don't know what possessed that grown man to tweet at him and tell him that Chad Morris is never going to be the guy and whatever, and you're going to a losing program. Okay, whatever. But TQ, he's one of the guys, and pretty much everyone in the 2019 signing class is like this. They come from pretty winning programs. I think Colin Clay out of Oklahoma is the only guy that comes from a program that struggled a lot this past season. So they're used to winning, and they believe they have what it takes to come in and help turn the program around, and that's exactly what you want. If you have guys that don't think that they can do it, then, you know, obviously you don't want to come to Arkansas and be a part of that, but they all have that mindset that they're going to be the ones to turn it around. And by all accounts, I think that Arkansas is doing exactly what they have to do to get that done. They're recruiting at a very high level in the SEC. I think they're ranked sixth in SEC recruiting right now. So they're getting it done.
Nikki, speaking of grown men, what would possess a grown man to put on a full football uniform with pads and then allow those photos to be tweeted nationwide? I understand they're standing next to their sons. It's a fun moment. Smiles all around. These men look a little bit silly. This is something Ty and I are going to get into later on in Get Off My Lawn. I want your opinion. What do you think about dads in full uniform for recruiting visits?
Yeah, the full uniform is probably a little much. I tweeted it out the other day or yesterday, and there was one guy, I think it was the Kentucky dad, who just had the jersey on, so that's pretty okay in my book. And maybe, who knows, maybe he played at Kentucky and it's like a legacy situation, and that's kind of nice. But I can't imagine what would possess a dad to put on the whole uniform unless he was egged on by his kid, in which case, hey, maybe don't listen to your kid when he's telling you to put on the uniform, because you're just going to end up looking a little silly. But recruiting at that point, when you know where you want to go, it's all pretty lighthearted, so they're not taking it too seriously.
All right, well, I guess I shouldn't take it so seriously either. But a lot of people are. Everybody's got an opinion on this, and it just, I mean, it does go to show. These are some of the bigger programs that have done this. You saw the photos come out of Florida, out of Penn State. So it's a thing now. I guess this is something we should get used to.
Yeah, apparently. I wouldn't be surprised to see someone maybe next recruiting cycle pull that out in Fayetteville. And they'll probably go along with it, you know, anything to make the kids happy. That's what it's about. I mean, they lay out all the uniforms and all the different colors, and the kids get to pick out which combo they want to wear. So it's all about making the kids happy. And so if they really insist on putting a dad in a uniform, I'm sure the staff will go along with it, because at the end of the day, you just want that kid to sign with you, with the program, you know.
Nikki, before we let you go, tell me about Ricky Stromberg. He's the kid they just flipped from Tulsa. Usually you wouldn't be all that excited about flipping somebody from TU, but apparently this is a bit of a different situation.
Yeah, so Arkansas approached this really smartly. They had been talking to him every day for quite a while, but they waited to offer until the last possible moment so that no one else would jump on to him. But he actually had an older brother go to Arkansas, not a football player, but just a regular student. So he had been to Arkansas several times already. He liked the program a lot. And from his junior to his senior year, he dropped like 30 pounds. And if you watch his senior tape, which I highly recommend, he looks really good all around. He plays all the different positions on the line. And they're projecting him at center, which is huge because, as you know, the center spot was probably one of the weakest for this in 2018. And the more depth you have there, the better. And the more competition you have there, the better.
Nikki, let me top off the interview with this. If Chad Morris doesn't end up with the transfer quarterback, are fans going to be satisfied with the 2019 class?
Well, you know, there's a lot of hope in KJ Jefferson, and I think he has a lot of potential. They're just going to really have their work cut out for them getting him ready. And I think that Connor Nolan by that time could be a little bit more prepared, but I do think they need someone with more experience and probably a little bit more accuracy. But at the end of the day, it's a lot is riding on the offensive line and those guys getting better. So as much as it's important to have a good quarterback, the offensive line needs to pick it up so that the guys on campus can show what they can do.
Well, and finally, now you have a full slew of offensive linemen. You referred to the golden number of 15. Now with the flip of the kid from Tulsa. So there's a positive thing. You got 6 recruits coming in on O-line, 15 on the team. And at least numbers-wise, they were not good numbers-wise going in next season. They will be this upcoming season.
Yep, absolutely. There were times where they were only practicing with 10 guys or less, so 10 scholarship guys or less. So having 6 come in and 2 JUCO guys that really do look ready to contribute right away, that's going to be huge.
Nikki, it's always fun. We're off Tuesday. Next week, obviously, with a holiday, so I hope you have a Merry Christmas and a Merry Commitmas, as we've heard it referred to by some of our other guests. And appreciate all you've done with us this year. Look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks, guys. Happy holidays.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Clutch blood running through Darryl Macon's veins. The Razorbacks win it 71-70.
It was a brief topic on the Morning Rush where I think it was Tommy Kraft asked John, he didn't ask John Neighbors, he just stated it as a fact that Oklahoma would not, they had more than one loss if they played in the SEC. John blindly agreed with him. And I'm thinking, you know, you're probably right about that. Then I think to myself, well, let's see. You can look at all the statistics about defense and how the offense performed against so-and-so and this and that, but really it's about the schedule that you're playing and the teams that are in front of you. And I think that there would be a decent chance for Oklahoma to finish the regular season with one loss if they played an SEC schedule. So here's what I did. I went onto the Arkansas Razorback website, which, by the way, is a new look today. Interesting, the day before your early signing day period
starts. It
looks
good. I'll give their last, not this past update, but the one before was terrible. So this one is pretty good job, whoever did.
This is a fresh look. It's, of course, they've got the requisite red and white all over the place, but it's a little easier to navigate around, and you can found the schedule pretty easily here. So I put them on the Arkansas schedule. They beat Colorado State and North Texas, right? Do you think Oklahoma beat either of those teams? I think so. Go on the road at Auburn. To me, Auburn I think that's a game Oklahoma wins. Auburn doesn't have offense to keep up with Oklahoma, even on the road at Auburn. Texas A&M, and then that's a win for Oklahoma. Then you get Alabama. All right, so there's your loss. There's your one loss for me. They'll beat Ole Miss. They'll beat Vanderbilt. LSU, now that's one that I question a little bit. It would be a home game since LSU played in Fayetteville. In Norman, I'd say OU beats LSU. At Mississippi State, look, I know Mississippi State put up 52 against Arkansas, But I could also see Alabama. I could also see them not putting up anywhere close to 40 or 35 points against OU. And then the game against Missouri, I think they're able to outscore Missouri. So I think there's a good chance. I'm not saying that it'd be a guarantee. I think there's a very good chance that if you put Oklahoma into the SEC West, and they're not LSU because then they don't play Georgia. That was the cross-division game this year for the Tigers and the Bulldogs. I think there's a very good chance Oklahoma still has just one loss, and that one loss would be to Alabama. Although, it'd be a home game since Alabama played at Fayetteville. So, again, who knows? Who knows? I do think, I mean, if Alabama and Oklahoma play 10 times, OU wins maybe two or three. I think we're going to see a really good playoff game between those two schools. And I think I give Oklahoma a fighter's chance. And I'd give them a fighter's chance to go 11-1 in the regular season in the SEC.
All right, here's the thing about OU, Phil, that you failed to mention. They are 96th in scoring defense, giving about 32 points a game. They gave up to 54 points to Georgia last game, a game they had won. So if you're going to base it off Arkansas' schedule, I'm not going to disagree with you 100%. Here's where it gets tricky. I think the question you posed to me last night, I could be wrong, but didn't you ask me last night, would Georgia run through the SEC? Is that, I could be wrong.
Oklahoma,
excuse me. Isn't that how you worded the question to me last night?
No, this was just something I sent earlier today. I didn't ask you this last night because this was something I brought that I heard the guys bring up on the Morning Rush
today.
Okay,
it was this morning.
So you're confusing me with somebody else.
I don't know.
Go back here and see what I texted
you. Maybe it was
Cannell
or something I was listening or watching to.
I said, let's argue. And that was why I said, let's argue about how OU would have done in the SEC West this year.
Okay, so the defense has been abysmal. Stoops is gone. Ruffin McNeil's took over. Nothing has helped. They almost lost to Army this year. The Iowa State played them pretty close. This team is just Texas Tech is another one. They shouldn't have been close. They almost lost to Oklahoma State. That's a rivalry, so I guess we could chuck this out the window. West Virginia played them close, and then they had that loss to Texas. I'm with you. I think they lose to Alabama, even if that game was in Gaylord Memorial. But it's hard for me to fathom a team that's giving up 32 points per game. And I know the offenses in the SEC aren't that potent comparatively speaking to the Big 12.
That's the thing for me. It's that nobody else can keep up with them. But their defenses are much better than some of the defense. Exactly right.
That's where
this becomes, you know, just a lot of, you know, what would happen if, and nobody can really be so sure. Although I do think this year in the SEC, it certainly in the West, every year, it's Alabama, and then it's everybody else. LSU is a flawed team, certainly on offense. So is Mississippi State. Those are the only two teams that would pose a problem, I think, for OU. And I could see the Sooners overcoming those two defenses.
Yeah, here's the thing. OU's got a pretty decent record against the Big 12, against the SEC. 4-2 against the SEC since 2010, 7-4 since 2000. Everyone remembers that 2014 victory against Bama in the Sugar Bowl. Trevor Knight diced them up in that game. And you know what? I can't definitively say that OU wouldn't go 11-1 because of Kyler Murray. There's no way they're beating Alabama. I don't think they're going to beat him this week, even if Tua is not 100%. But it's just hard for me to look at OU and say they would go 11-1 with that defense, because we saw it last year. Even with that potent offense, Phil, what happened was Georgia carved them up for 317 rushing yards, and even with a talented Heisman winner in Baker Mayfield, they weren't able to overcome that defense with 48 points. They scored 48 points in that game, and they still weren't able to overcome. The thing about the offenses in the SEC, and it's not going to be said about all of them, but a lot of them have power running games. Alabama, power running game. I know Tua's cranked it up more off from the passing perspective, but if they want to, they'll get you on the ground. They'll dog you to death. They will put them in the ground, put them 10 feet under. LSU's the exact same way. Mississippi State, same way with Nick Fitzgerald. These power running games from the SEC that they would face in the SEC West would kill Ruffin McNeil squad.
Well, and that's what Army did against Oklahoma.
They almost lost to Army in OT, Phil.
Sure, but they still ended up winning it. And I think Tommy just sent both of us a text, makes a good point, that since the Big 12 isn't as physical as the SEC, that perhaps Kyler Murray wouldn't last the season in the SEC West. So Tua didn't. They have Jalen Hurts there to back him up. He didn't lose anything in that situation. I don't know who the second stringer is, quarterback for Oklahoma, but we know, and this is one of the reasons that you and I both thought that Murray deserved the Heisman vote, was because he was the single most valuable player in all of college football. So you lose Kyler Murray, and you basically lose almost your entire team.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.